Subcommittee of the Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means General Government will come to order. And as we concluded yesterday, and I, first of all, let me beg your pardon for the late start again. I apologize if this is becoming more of a habit than it's a bad habit. We'll pick up with where we basically were concluding yesterday. We were concluding with page 50C, dealing with the code of compliance and the quality and compliance code of conduct, and the issues of the personal qualities and the best practices employed by the successful employees. And I've made the comment that this was an absolutely wonderful creed, and if the entire department buys into it, I think we've got a well-managed, well-staffed department. So let's proceed. Suma Glashing represents Legislative Fiscal Office today, and Jamie Pan is our clerk, and we'll proceed at this time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, Elizabeth Arshenko, Director of the Department of Revenue. What we'd like to do today is move directly into the property tax area, which is under the third tab in your binder. And as you recall, our theme for the income tax presentation was maintaining a healthy income tax system through a balanced approach. We also are interested in maintaining a healthy property tax system. And before we jump right into that, I wanted to share with you that we provided for the members of the committee a copy of our Understanding Oregon Taxes booklet that we referred to yesterday that we shared with the high school teachers, and also the report that was done by the team from our leadership revenue group that went out to three high schools and an Oregon Youth Authority facility to talk to young people about why we pay taxes. And I had said they had a very favorable response from the students, and so we wanted to share the report with you today. Mr. Chair, we have for you, as you requested, the agreements between the department and the transit districts, and Jim has those, and we'll provide them to you.
Thank you very much.
Session. Okay, the property tax system is very important in two respects. Obviously, it's very important to local government. The schools, cities, counties, special districts all rely to some extent or another on the property tax system as a resource. And as we pointed out in our discussion so far, the state funding system for schools is now intimately related to the property tax system because the state attempts to backfill behind property tax losses for schools. Turning to page 54A, I would like to go through with you just very briefly the cataclysmic events in the property tax system that have happened in the last decade. We have, before Measure 5, our system was based on what we call a levy-based system, where the taxing district would go through its process of building its budget, would determine the resources that it had available, and would then determine how much it needed in property tax in order to balance that budget. The district would then certify the levy to the assessor, and the assessor would have determined the taxable value of all of the taxable property in the district, would divide that value into the levy to produce a rate, and then the taxes for each property would be calculated, and the tax collector would send out the tax statement. When Measure 5 passed, there were some additional limits that were put on the property tax system. Before that, the big limit was the constitutional tax base limit, which was that you couldn't levy more than your tax base unless the voters gave you permission to do that. When Measure 5 passed, another limit was added to the existing system, and that was that every property was protected from having taxes imposed upon it greater than, when that Measure 5 was fully phased in, $5 to $1,000 of assessed value to be used for educational purposes, and $10 to $1,000 of value to be used for other governmental purposes. And so this added a new step in the process that the assessor then had to, after receiving a levy, transforming that levy into a rate, extending the rate against the value of each property, testing then the amount of tax charged against each property to make sure that it was within those Measure 5 limits. Then in 1996, Measure 47 passed. The legislature sent out to the voters Measure 50, which replaced Measure 47. And Measure 50 added another layer of limitation onto the property tax system. The Measure 5 limits were still there, and those calculations still have to be made. And now Measure 50 added one more layer, and that is that taxing districts now have a fixed rate at which they can, a maximum rate at which they can assess for their general operations. The limit doesn't apply to bonds, but as far as operating levies, now they can't levy higher than a certain rate calculated according to the Constitution and the implementing statute. And the other major limit that was placed on the property tax system by Measure 50 was the limit on the growth in assessed value. One of the things that people were very concerned about, and I think upset about, after Measure 50 passed and had been implemented fully, was that their taxes kept going up. And this was because we stayed in a very high rate of growth on residential property during the 1990s. Now, in many areas, double-digit rates of growth in the value of residential property. And so voters didn't see the tax relief that they expected. So the other major feature of Measure 50 is a limit on that growth. And the values were rolled back to the 1995-96 tax year values and cannot increase by more than 3% per year. For property for which the value, the market value of the property is going down or staying the same, the limit is actually the market value of the property. It's the lower of those two numbers. So the rollback plus the 3% per year, or the actual market value, whichever one is lower.
Then in that regard, new property which is brought under the tax roll is adjusted down by that same ratio of value that the real market plus the increase compares to the base plus the increases compares to the real market value as a ratio.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. When new property is constructed or brought onto the tax roll for the first time, there's a formula that has to be applied so that property goes into the system at an assessed value that's comparable to other similar property of the same real market value. And we've got an example to sort of illustrate that. Actually, before I go on, I should introduce the person who is sitting next to me at the table. This is Randy Evers. He's the administrator of the Property Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. Randy has been with the department for over 20 years, and he has been in the income tax program. And he moved to the property tax program just a little over a year ago and went through immersion learning. And he has learned well, and I think he's as excited about property tax as he used to be about the income tax program. And he'll be picking up in just a couple of pages here to go through some of the detailed information on the property tax system. But I'll continue on page 55 just to give you a quick overview of the way that property tax revenues are distributed. For the 1997-98 tax year, about $2.4 billion was collected in property tax revenue. And you can see that still the largest proportion of that money is distributed to the schools, including community colleges and education service districts in that red part of that pie. Cities and counties get a fairly significant share, and special districts and urban renewal round out the large categories of distribution of those revenues. Turning to page 56, there are several funding sources also for administration of the property tax system. And in a minute, I'll be talking about the division of labor between the Department of Revenue and the counties, which play a role in the administration of the system. Counties provide about, again, we're looking at the 297-98 numbers. The system total was $73.1 million cost that year. The counties provided $48 million of that amount out of their general funds to run the assessment and taxation functions, which they are charged with running. The Department of Revenue for that year was appropriated $9.4 million to perform much of the functions that we perform in terms of appraisal of very large industrial properties and utility properties, and also the support and guidance that we provide to the counties under the statute. There's a grant program that is funded through two other fund sources. One is a portion of the interest that is paid on delinquent property taxes comes to the department for administration through a grant program. The current rate of interest is 16%, and of that, 4% of the 16 from delinquent school property taxes comes into this account, and 8% of the 16% for cities and special districts or city counties and special districts. City kind of special districts come into that fund. The other source of funds is a fee that's charged for recording certain documents at the local level, and that's a $10 per document fee. All those funds go into an account that the department administers. We are authorized to keep about $1.5 million out of that a pot of money to provide appraisal for industrial plants that are worth between $1 million and $5 million. And the rest we distribute into a grant process to the counties to help support their costs. They have to show us their budget and adequately fund assessment and taxation, and then those grants are distributed.
So if I can get a better feel, I guess a number of question marks on this page. The general fund counties, the $48 million out of the $72.1 million of annual cost, $48 million comes from the general funds of the counties.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And then the grant funds, is that an old House bill that gave them grant funds?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that was House Bill 2338, and I believe it was in
1989. And does that sunset now? Is that what happens?
That sunset at the end of the 1999 to 2000 tax year, so June 30th, 2000, that sunset.
Right.
Unless House Bill 2139 is enacted, and that will take the sunset away.
Okay, so 2139, which is this session,
yes.
House Bill 2139 from the 1999 session, that's the one I told you was better passed on toast in my counties, that will take care of the House Bill 2338 funding. Any additional that will be addressed there?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2139 continues the funding that comes off of interest from delinquent taxes, and it continues the document recording fee. It expands the number of documents and kinds of documents that would be subject to that fee, and so there will be more funds coming in under 2139 that are coming in today to go into that grant account.
Now, do we know the anticipated amount that will be, I guess what I'm looking for is to find out how much we're going to eat into that big red part of the pie that is presently provided from county general funds. In addition to the $12 million, are we going to be eating into some of that piece that the counties have been providing from general funds?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the fact that the base of documents, the kinds of documents that will be subject to being expanded, is going to produce some additional revenue. And I believe you have about Tantine scheduled to testify a little bit later. I'm quite sure he's intimately familiar with the legislation and could tell you how much.
Okay. And then the $9.4 million of Department of General Funds, I'm sorry, I misunderstood what, I guess you didn't write down what where that came from.
That comes from the State General Fund. It's an appropriate part of our appropriation.
So we'll just an annual number, it's twice that for the biennium.
That's correct.
So we'll see that $18.8 million as a request from general funds from the Department of Revenue for some similar amount from general funds to augment the cost of administering the property taxation.
Mr. Chair, it's in our base budget.
Yes. Okay,
it's
in
our current service level.
Yes. The little pink slice, the other fund's pink slice, is funds we receive from counties when we do mapping. They pay, we enter into a contract, and under the statute, the state pays 50% of the cost, and the county pays 50% of the cost. So that's what that $1.2 million of other funds is on this pie chart.
So the 14 counties that you're doing mapping for, those 14 counties pay the $1.2 million? Okay, and then the other $1.2 million then would come from
part of the 9.4.
Okay. Senator Long is recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So page 65. We have a $15 property tax nationally, and that at least $10 goes to schools, $15. $5 loans of school system in the government year. And if you see the school amount is $1.1 billion out of 2.4, which according to the number it should be one third, but it is almost 46% of the total pie. Maybe some of the taxing districts, they might not go up to way up to $15. Maybe it might be less. I don't know why it is instead of one-third is 46% almost in the chart.
Well, Senator Lamb, there are probably two different reasons that would contribute to this the most. One is that in some areas of the state, the levies do not reach those maximums, those measured by maximums. The other is that any kind of tax levy that goes to pay bonds isn't subject to the limit. So it's not going to exactly match one third.
The bond included in it?
Bond, yes.
Okay,
this is got it. All dollars that are collected.
Okay,
turning to page 57, we tried to lay out for you a breakdown of the functions and the dollars attached to those functions that are performed at the county level. I think of the assessment and taxation function in the calendar year, and the early part of the year, the assessor's office is doing a lot of work determining property values, determining whether acting on applications for exemption or for special assessment, doing sales data analysis, getting new properties worked into the role at the appropriate value level, and so that all happens sort of in the early part of the year. And then once the assessor turns over to the tax collector in sort of late summer, very early fall, the tax roll, which has on it what is the taxable property, what is the value of which is going to be taxed, and what are the taxes on each parcel, and that goes to the tax collector, and the tax collector has to prepare the tax statements and get those out, and then receive the tax payments back in the fall. And then those go into the unsegregated tax collections account and are distributed out to the taxing district. The counties also have to maintain all the data about all of those tax accounts, whether they are taxable or whether they are exempt. All the property in the county has to be kept track of for its status and its value. And then many counties do have a mapping function that they perform, have mapping staff, and so about $4 million statewide is spent by counties on maintaining their own maps.
Senator Lund is recognized. I do appreciate it. And I think you touched up a little bit, maybe I just, I'm not sure. So we save about 3% when we pay total amount of property tax. And at the same time, you charge a penalty, whatever interest, to those who couldn't pay in time. How much is the 3% to those, and how much is the penalty? I'd like to compare whether we are losing or are gaining some money when it's combined together.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm sure I'm clear what you're asking.
Okay.
Would you like to know the dollar amount of the 3% discount?
Yes, the total amount.
Basis.
Yes.
And then the dollar amount of interest that is coming in on delinquent tax payments?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have that information. We will get it for you.
Okay.
We'll have it for you at the beginning of the session tomorrow.
Okay, and then one more thing, if I may. You have a lot of property that the church, things like the charitable organization, they don't pay property tax. I just get an idea how much are the taxable income we are losing because of this property.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, the tax expenditure report that was prepared by the Department of Revenue and the Department of Administrative Services would have that information in it. We try to give you an idea of
yeah.
the amount of value that isn't on the tax roll that would be if those kinds of exemptions weren't in place. I don't know if there's a copy of that report here. We did bring one to you on Tuesday, but that information would be in the tax expenditure report. It is possible that the amount of value that we have reported in the report is not as accurate and precise as the amount of value that's on the roll because it's off, and it's not as critical to know what that value is really precisely, but we should be able to give you
some ballpark to sign in to know.
Thank you. Was that broken down county by county, or was that...
Mr. Chair, I believe in the report that it's aggregated statewide, but we would have in our records the ability to break it down county by county if that was desirable.
Let me ask a question, turning back to page 45 just momentarily, and I don't mean to belabor this, but we used to ask the county of residence, and I recognize that, that you could probably pull county of residence off from zip codes. However, the zip codes may reflect a post office box or may reflect a nominee location. Do we still ask for county of residence on a tax return? I don't see it here on this information.
I'm trying to remember, Mr. Chair, whether I filled that in when I filed my return or not. We'll check.
Again, along the lines of what we talked about relative to school and school districts, perhaps, in addition to the school district of residence, maybe that information, the county of residence, might be of value as we examine information relative to income tax information. And again, the only reason that is so that if there were a change in the way we funded some projects and programs in the future, we would know the impact county by county, school district by school district. Thank you.
I'm ready to turn to page 58. This pie chart tries to break down for you the major components of the program that is administered from the department side. For the property tax. We're still looking at 1997-98 annual numbers. We have staff that work in all of these areas, industrial and utility valuation. As I said before, we are responsible under state law to determine the assessed value of all industrial plants that are worth more than $1 million, and I believe that's right around 800 accounts. We're also responsible for determining the value of all centrally assessed properties, which is telecommunications, energy companies, railroads, and airlines. We provide assistance, education, and policy direction to the counties. We have experts on our staff who are able to provide support to county assessor's offices, tax collectors, boards of property tax appeals, used to be the old Board of Equalization, and the people who are responsible for budgeting at the county level, because state law governs the local budget process. And we have folks who have different regions of the state that they're assigned to support, and they're on the phones or out in those areas providing that support. We also adopt administrative rules to further explain the application of state statutes and the Constitution to the property tax system. We have a mapping function, which several of you saw when you came through our office on Monday. We work with the county to maintain property tax maps. We administer timber tax programs, both the Western Oregon and Eastern Oregon privilege taxes, the forest product harvest tax, and we determine and establish for the counties the value of forest lands that they assess locally. And we administer the senior deferral program, which we talked about a little bit yesterday, which is a program where people who are qualified by age and income level can have the state pay their property taxes for them. They then take a lien on their house and they repay when they sell the property. On page 59 is a bar chart that shows you the breakdown of the funding sources of the department activities in the property tax system. For the county assistance education and policy direction function that we perform, the blue part of each bar is general fund, and the red part of each bar is other funds. And in that first column, the red part of the bar would be that old House Bill 2238 funding, Mr. Chair, that would be extended by House Bill 2139. And the same is true in the utility and industrial evaluation bar. The red portion of that bar is the funding that is coming from those interest on delinquent taxes and the document recording fee that is retained by the department. And the blue is a direct general fund out of our budget.
Mr. Chair, is the interest on delinquent taxes, is that just interest on delinquent property taxes, or is it all taxes, or what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troy, it's interest on delinquent property taxes.
Property taxes. Is that revenue sufficient to do what it needs to do for you?
Chair, Senator Troy, it depends on your point of view.
What's your point of view?
It depends on the viewpoint of the person who's asking the question. When you go back to the chart that shows how the property tax system cost is funded on page 56, if you were a county, you might say not enough money is coming in from interest on delinquent property tax accounts to offset more of the general fund that counties are paying.
That really does offset what the counties pay, is that right? So if that area of purple or whatever that color is would grow, then the other color would shrink.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, that's correct. If that purple area that's labeled as $12 million gets bigger, then that should offset.
And is that the entirety of the delinquent taxes on property that goes into that fund, the entirety of it?
It goes into the very dark blue and the turquoise, everything that's labeled as grant funds. It goes in there along with the document recording fee.
Okay.
Right. So the two taken together produced about $13.5 million in 1994.
Okay. And they go in there. And if there were more money, then it would help the counties, right? Is the interest charged realistic interest? Could you up the interest and give the counties more money?
Chair, Senator Trello, the interest rate right now is 16%. It has been for quite a while.
Yeah, since 94, I think, when you've got a statutory change.
That's about what it is there.
It's hard for me to imagine that we'd be able to increase that rate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lamb, so by that time they meet the 3%, and then the 16% is the 90% maximum they can pay. The combined together, I guess that's a lot of money, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, the 3% discount is an incentive to encourage people to pay their whole property tax bill in November.
Yes, of course.
They have actually the ability to pay it in thirds, one-third in November, one-third in February, one-third in May, with no penalty.
Yes.
So the 16% interest only begins to apply if they haven't paid in the installments.
One more question. Thank you. I have a gentleman who wrote me some time ago concerning some contention of the property tax issue, and then maybe the gentleman might owe $500, but the department spent about more than $10,000 to collect $500. how do we resolve that? Sometimes we try to overkill a small amount of flat, but the manpower you might have to use is, could be 10 times more than the actual amount of tax dollars that you try to collect.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, that is a very complex and involved story. There's more to it than just $500 and $10,000. When a property owner wants to go to court, which they have a right to do, the state is obligated to use the services of the Attorney General's office to represent the state, and they charge us for that service. And there's a lot of process that goes on when you're in court, a lot of paperwork, arguments and briefs and things go back and forth, and the bill can go up fairly quickly. When there is a principle at stake, it really isn't about a difference in value, but it's more about a principle of property tax administration. We make a judgment on whether we need to really put some effort into the court case. And if the one you're talking about is the one I'm thinking about, that was the situation. But there was a principle of property tax administration at stake rather than just a value dispute.
Okay.
And actually, under the circumstances, the taxpayer went through the tax court and has gone into the Oregon Supreme Court, and we have to respond.
That the collection agency, maybe easier just to give it to them that they work on it, and what's the situation there?
Well,
I'm talking about some practicality about the principle.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lamb, when it comes to property taxes, the actual collection of the taxes occurs at the local level. The tax collector collects the taxes. The department doesn't collect property taxes. But we are responsible, with the way that the process has been set up in the law, we are responsible to defend the system whenever someone files an appeal. And in this particular case, there was a dispute that had started at the local level. Through the appeals process, as the taxpayer got into the Oregon Tax Court and the Oregon Supreme Court, the state takes over the as a party in the litigation.
Okay.
The taxpayer must have a lot of expenses connected with this, too. You wonder why he wants to spend so much money to fight $500.
It was a very complex,
I know.
Involved set of issues, and I'd be happy to do it independently and chat further if you want to know more. Turning back to page 59, on the bar chart, the center bar is reflects the administrative cost of our timber tax system. In that system, most of our costs are first paid out of general fund, and then the general fund is reimbursed out of the privilege tax receipt. Some of our tax administration, which goes for programs other than the privilege tax, is also covered out of our normal general fund appropriation. So I'm on page 59.
59, okay.
Bar chart.
So, Mr. Chair, why is the general fund obligated to be involved in that call? Why not just get your money from the timber tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trello, there are actually, as I understand it, five programs that we call timber tax programs. Two of them are privilege tax, and the cost of the privilege tax, which is the largest cost, is reimbursed by the tax program. But we also collect the forest products and harvest taxes, which are dedicated to very specific purposes like forestry research. That's the one that jumps right back into my head. I believe there are two or three different purposes for which that tax is assessed. And the administrative cost for that tax collection is not recouped out of the tax receipt. And then the work that we do to determine the value of forest land throughout the state is also not related to the privilege tax, and so that administrative cost is just out of general fund. The other two blocks show the mapping and the split in the mapping and the senior deferral, which is a completely self-funding program at this time for the administrative cost.
Let me ask this with regard to the mapping itself, if I may, Ms. Hartenkel. The mapping activity that you're doing for the 14 counties, I believe, appears to be pretty substantial and on a 50-50 basis. Is it really economical for all of the other counties, the other 22 counties, to run their own mapping departments, their cartography, and all of those other kinds of things? Particularly as we look into the future and have the perpetuity of the demand for record keeping and so forth, the assessments and taxation and clerk issues.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that what happens in the individual counties is partly driven by the size of the county and the resources available to it. For example, Multnomah County has many thousands of accounts. In fact, I believe Multnomah County has more accounts than all of the counties that we do the mapping service for, the map maintenance for. So they can justify having cartographers on their staff. And I think that they most likely, when they're doing their budgeting, they look at what's the cost of maintaining the people who have the expertise and who can also answer questions from people at the counter. Versus turning everything over to us. When you look at, there's a map in the back of this tab, 68A, and the green, the counties that are marked in green are those where we have a maintenance agreement with those counties, and if I'm remembering correctly, when Scott Jackson spoke to you, with less than 200,000 total accounts. So they're bigger and more spread out in those counties that we're handling. And when you get into really populous counties, they do maintain their own mapping department. And I think they make a judgment about what's going to be the most cost effective for them. But if there's more information we can get for you, we'd be happy to do that.
Yes, I had down as an item that what I needed to have was some information regarding the fee arrangements that is 50-50 within the 22 counties that we drew all of those for, but also a county by county listing of what it costs, this previous graph, and how much it costs county by county to do the property tax assessment, the taxing assessing. And then the number of accounts in each of those counties, so that we would get an idea of how much
each county has invested in maintaining the records. I think that would be, that might be able to give us some direction as to how counties could be encouraged to utilize this service if they're spending more locally on it than perhaps what they would do if they were invested in the state program of the state picking up 50%, because obviously it's for the state's benefit to have all of the counties on the six-year rotation and current. I mean, for uniformity purposes and fairness purposes. And I think that was, the underlying reason to the House Bill 2338 from the 1989 session was at that time we were paying 12% interest. But if you'll recall, those were the years of the double-digit inflation, and 12% interest was cheaper than borrowing at the bank. And so a lot of people began to borrow from the state, from the counties, to fund their property tax payments because it was that much cheaper. That's when 2338 came in to add 4%, which the state took. And those were unsanitized dollars, incidentally. They went to the state, and then they shrunk at the state, and then we got $3 back for every quarter of the time. So, and Ms. Garchenko did
12 for every 13 and a half.
Okay, 12 for every 13 and a half. Okay.
I service for that.
And service for
okay, with a smile, too.
That's right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we will assemble some information for you on county costs. We had a project that we did during the interim, and Sue McGlashan gave you copies of the report that was made to the Interim Revenue Committee in November about assessment taxation funding. A lot of data was collected in the course of that work about what it costs to do work at the local level, what it costs to do work at the state, whether there was any shifting that would be appropriate, things that we could maybe do more efficiently, what needed to be done at the local level. And there's a lot of demand on the part of taxpayers for information from their assessor's office. So there's some need still to do quite a bit of work at the local level. And we looked at computer systems and a wide variety of other information to try to evaluate what the system ought to cost and how it ought to be funded.
Well, I guess my response to that, Ms. Archenko, would be that this is being processed by and large more and more on a daily basis on the lag time is the speed of light between Salem and Ontario or Vail, Oregon. I think that's the furthest away county seat that you've got. And so I guess when I look at that, and I've got 18 people in an office in Vail, Oregon doing cartography and doing all these other things, and when you look at the map, Niagara County is one of those that has no services basically being demanded
currently.
Is that what it means to be white in this map?
Yeah. What we asked the staff to do, Mr. Chair, Senator Schroeder, is to give you an idea of today what kinds of projects we're doing with the county. So this is a map of that tries to indicate current levels of activity.
That doesn't mean they don't have maps. It means they're doing the stuff all themselves. Is that what it means? So Fenton County, for instance, I assume, does all the mapping itself and doesn't need any help from you guys. So that's fair, Mr. Chair.
That's kind of a long question. So if I understand correctly, before Measure 5 or Measure 50, we did have what we need, and then we divided. Right now, instead of that, how much we are going to have, and then we are going to invest the truth right now we do that. But my question is, how do we decide what we need? Just previously, I just tried to put that to do, go back some, that's 10 years ago. The school, they say we need this much, police and citizens say we need this much, and with a total cut, and we divided it. How do we define the needs at the time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lamb, the taxing districts, the cities or the counties, or the lighting districts or fire districts or hospital districts, whatever it was, have to go through, and at the time, had to go through a budgeting process that was specified in state law. And in that budgeting process, they had to have a budget committee. They had to propose a budget and have public input on the budget. And then the governing body had to adopt the budget. And as they did that, as they went through that process, they would have to consider what are the resources that they have to help them pay for the services that they wanted to provide. One of the limitation in the property tax system that was in existence then was called the tax-based limitation. And every unit of local government had a limitation. Some had no tax base because it was a, had to be a voter-approved permanent base of revenue that they could raise. And if the amount of property tax that they felt that they needed in order to balance their budget was more than they could raise under their tax base, they had to go to the voters.
Okay.
And if the voters voted down the levy, then they'd have to go back and pare back on the budget until the voters agreed that they would provide the amount of revenue that was requested. So that was the way the check and balance worked, was in the ballot box.
Usually, Mr. Chair, I remember, usually the limit was 6%, I guess. It almost went up without question every year. Plus the property value went up, the rate went up, and the whole thing went up 1 year. I was so mad that the property value and tax went up so high. I think at the time it was high, it came up next year.
Well, but you were fortunate to have that much property and that much more value.
Yep, part of it too. That's
part of the great thing of being in America,
I guess so.
Okay, Mr. Chubby will get you that county by county.
Okay, and I just was looking for the 12 out of every 13 and a half. Where does that number come from?
That would be, go back to page 56.
Okay.
The grant fund.
That's the $12, or $12
million. $1.5 million.
And so the amount that comes from the counties is the $12 million.
That's the part that goes to the county.
Okay. How much was received from the counties?
Well, the interest on delinquent accounts and the document recording fees, total income was $13.5 million.
I see.
We were allowed to keep 1.5 in order to do the value of the industrial property between $1 million and $5 million in value, and the rest went out to the county.
All right, so the grant fund, the county grant fund plus the department grant fund is the $13.5 million, and $12 million of that has come from,
the whole
13.5 came from the county.
Comes from the delinquent interest and the document fee.
Right.
And
that includes the document fee.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, I'm going to take a look at 1989-2338 because my recollection is that for every dollar collected, only 75 cents was coming back to the county.
Well, I think we're getting more efficient, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to turn it over to Randy now to start on page 60.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Randy Evers. I'm the administrator of the Property Tax Division. And yesterday when you were asking questions around the unitary tax and the corporate excise tax, I was feeling much more comfortable because I felt like I knew a lot of that information. I fairly knew the property tax, so I'm very excited to be here, and I'm happy to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I wanted to talk just a little bit about Measure 50. I think Measure 50 is rather confusing, and there may be some misperceptions around Measure 50. I often hear from people that under Measure 50, the system is simpler. And actually, from an administrative standpoint, it's quite a bit more complex than it used to be. Under the first bullet, one of the things I wanted to talk about just briefly is that for all property accounts, we are actually required now to keep two numbers. We actually have still the market value, which we've always had, which is influenced by what's going on in the marketplace. So what a willing buyer and willing seller would be willing to exchange property for. So that continues to exist. And now for every property, we also have to keep the Measure 50 limit, which was the number that In 1997, we went back to 95, took off 10% of the value, and that became the starting place. And then the Measure 50 limit can grow 3% per year. So for all properties, we have to keep both of those numbers. So that has added some complexity to the system. Now, the second bullet talks just a little bit about growth under Measure 50. Again, the Measure 50 limit can grow at 3%, so there is some built-in growth to the limit. And also, I think, Representative Butler, you talked a little bit about new property, and new property is added to the Measure 50 limit, so there can be growth in that regard.
The new property in excess of $10,000.
Yes, it is. The limit is $10,000 for any one tax year, or $25,000 for an accumulative 5 years. So if a person was to add $7,000 the first year, $7,000 the second year, and then maybe $8,000 once they exceeded $25,000 in a 5 year period, the entire amount of that new property would be added to the Measure 50 limit. And then the third bullet talks about the tax rates being permanently fixed.
Sure. Are you allowed to assess that property de novo once they have this kind of addition, or do you just assess the addition and add it on to the reduced growth level?
Mr. Chair, Senator Charles, I think the example would be once the new property is added, the Measure 50 limit would come up and add the new property at the market value. Then we would compare that new number with the market value of the entire property, and the lower of those two would be the taxable value that would go on the roll.
I'm trying to understand whether or not you're just adding an assessment of the increment, or are you starting all over with the total package and assessing the stuff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scholl, we're adding the increment.
Okay.
Turning to page 61, I wanted to talk just a little bit about the importance of market value. As I explained earlier, we do have two numbers now, the Measure 50 limit and the market value. A lot of the market value continues to exist because some of the appraisal work that we do. Again, I think there was a thought that appraisal work would not be as important under Measure 50, but it still becomes important. And there are three examples on the page that talk about that. First of all, one of the key concepts under Measure 50 was that new property or new additions to property would be given the Measure 50 favorable treatment, so it would look like property that existed at the time. And I have an example of that on the next page that I'll get into just a little bit more detail. The second bullet talks about the Measure 50 limits that Senator Lim talked about, and the Measure 5 limits. And the Measure 5 limits are applied to the market value. So again, the importance of keeping good market values in the system. And then the third bullet talks about the kind of special properties, industrial properties, and centrally assessed. These properties are rather unique in that often, because they're business properties and they're subject to depreciation, their market values will actually be lower than the limit calculation. So again, the importance of having good market values on the roll for these types of properties. And I have an example that will go into just a little bit more detail. On page 61A,
can I just ask a brief question? It was my understanding that under Measures 47 and 50, we were going to have a lot easier program. Has it really turned out to be a lot easier program to administer for our county assessment people?
Mr. Chair, I let me give an example. I think from an individual taxpayer standpoint, because I think they understand the Measure 50 limit and the growth is at 3%, I believe from their standpoint, they probably have an easier time understanding how their taxes might go up. But from an administrative standpoint, the fact that we have two numbers in the system now and the complexity of maintaining two numbers has made the system more complex for the county and for the department on the industrial essentially assessed properties that we assist.
Yeah, you truly got a disparity between, and it's a true disparity, and it's not easily identified between the real market value and the assessed value. And in some states, you can look at the property tax statement, and we used to do that in Oregon, and see that the assessed value might be at 75% on all property of the real market value. And some years it would be at 75%, and then 80%, and 90%, and pretty soon the real market value was the assessed value. And I'm not sure what caused all of that, but But now we're back to a system which, because of the permanent tax bases, these fixed tax rates that are in these various areas, and each one is different because of the unique districts that may be affecting that, that any two properties, even neighbors across the street, if they're in two different tax districts, the percentage difference between the two could be material. Is that correct? Because they could have, one could be in the fire district and then the hospital district and then the community college district, and the one across the street, maybe not on any one of those trees. So that permanent tax rate would be different. Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
The total tax rate applicable to any single property is determined by what district that property is located in. And so the biggest differential you see is property that's inside a city limit and property that's outside a city limit, because the city rate applies.
Which
you're in a different school district.
A higher base, in effect. The school district, you know. I was hoping that as a result of Measure 50, we'd be able to make all computations in all of our assessor's offices throughout the state by a machine that would sit on a small portable desk with no moving parts. That didn't happen. So I guess we all thought we were voting for one thing, got another, but that wouldn't be the first time it's happened. As Senator Lund was mentioned about Measure 5. So. Okay, thank you. I beg your pardon.
Mr. Chair, if you would turn to page 61A, I'm going to try not to get into lots of detail because these examples can become quite confusing, but the example in 61A tries to demonstrate the importance of the market value, maintaining good market values. This is actually an example where we're looking at other properties out in the marketplace, and if they have good market values, the new home, if you look at the facts in this page, you have a new home built in 1999. The cost of this brand new home is $100,000, so the market value would be $100,000, and we're assuming for simplicity a tax rate of $15 per $1,000 of value.
That's compression.
Under example one, if you look out into the marketplace and you find this same type of home that was built in 99, let's say three bedrooms and two baths, the same type of construction, and the market and the counties and the department have done a good job of keeping market values accurate. When you look at the tax roll under example one, because those homes that have the benefit of Measure 50, they are actually on the tax roll of $78,000. And in that example, the new home, even though it has a market value of $100,000, should also be added to the tax roll of $78,000, and the tax in this example would be $1,170. So that's kind of the ideal situation where we've done a good job of keeping accurate market values in the marketplace. And then that, again, results in the equity in the system. Example two, without getting into too much detail, is an example where if you go out into the marketplace and look at this comparable home, the new home, and look at something comparable, market values have not been maintained. In this example, market values are too low. And the result of that is that this new property, the new addition, looks like a more expensive home in the system when actually come onto the tax roll at a higher value, at about $87,000. And the tax in this situation would be $1,305. So those two properties would have a $135 difference in tax due to the value. And then the example three is simply going the other way, where if you look to the marketplace, you will find that the comparable home is actually 10% too high. This home would come onto the roll at a lower value by getting the Measure 50 benefit. And in this example, the taxes would be $1,065. So simply trying to demonstrate the importance of having market values in the marketplace as we add new property to the tax roll.
Mr. Evers, relative to the examples 2 and 3, that information is obtained from a data analyst. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Is that something that the state should be doing and providing to the counties as opposed to counties trying to do their own data analyst work? This is extremely technical work and really needs to be refined. You're going to have 36 folks, including someone out in Wheeler County, that is something just short of Einstein themselves in some cases, in order to pull this information together. Why doesn't the state help these counties, or does it? Maybe I'm out on a limb here. Please help me with that.
Mr. Chair, the department does provide some training on how the different counties gather data, put it into their databases, and do some of the racial analysis without getting into too much detail, because that's probably about the extent of my knowledge in that area. I would comment that in the interim, the Assessment Taxation Committee that looked at the funding piece talked about a number of areas and where there might be efficiencies in the system. And while there were no conclusions at this point in time about which specific pieces might move to the state or vice versa, I think that's a good ongoing dialogue that we ought to continue to have with the counties. One of the things that I think came out of that discussion was just the processing of the personal property returns in the counties. Might that be more efficient at the department? You have the tour of the processing center, and might that be something that can move to the state for an efficiency standpoint? So I don't have a lot of knowledge in the area, other than I assume that as we continue to have that dialogue, there could be some things that we could get some efficiency.
I don't mean to bore the members of the committee with this, but let me just use example three as a starting point, and that is that I'm getting my property tax statement, and I just paid $100,000 for this home, and I get a property tax statement that says taxable value $71,000, and I say, well, that looks about right to me. That's not a whole lot different than $78,000, and I'm just John Doe. I don't know what the black box numbers are that fit into this formula, and so I go ahead and merely pay the tax on the assessed value, the taxable value of $71,000. The problem with this is, and again, we've got property that's in compression, so we're collecting one third of all of the money is going into the schools. That's $5 on $15, and the difference between the correctly and accurately assessed and taxed property at paying a tax of $1,170 to the incorrectly and improperly assessed property is the difference of $105, and you divide that up, and it looks like the schools just took a hit of about $70, or $35. So I guess for a layman, it would be very difficult to come and try and analyze that information and say, well, yeah, that looks correct, or no, that doesn't look correct. Because, as I say, if you go across the street to the neighbors, and the neighbor could look at it and say, well, I guess we could run a percentage on it. Of course, he's in a different district for cemetery district or something, some or a different school district, I guess. And there's just very little comparison. So I guess when I look at that, I'm just concerned that there's not much uniformity between the AV and the RMV, and I'll pay my fine afterwards. I'll pay a whole big fine today. I feel like I got run over with a Mack truck. Okay, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if we could turn to page 61B. A second example of the importance of market value. This is a very different example where we are actually looking at the specific property. Again, I mentioned for industrial and centrally assessed properties, because of their nature, they typically depreciate in value. So what we are seeing is, initially, when we looked at the 97 values and rolled back, there was benefit under Measure 50. The limit was actually the lower of the two. But as time goes on, because these are depreciating properties, we're finding that their taxable value is actually their market value, because it is the lower of the two. So quickly to walk through the example, this is an industrial plant. Under Measure 50, it has a limit of $10 million. And the market value is at $8 million. So in example one, again, is the ideal situation where we look to the Measure 50 limit. the market value being at $8 million, Measure 50 says look to the two numbers, and the lower those two becomes the taxable value. And under example one, the tax on this industrial property would be $120,000. An example two is an example where if we're not out doing our appraisal work and keeping good market values on properties, in this case, the Measure 50 limit stays the same at $10 million. That's the calculation. The market value in this situation is 10% too high. The market value then becomes $8,800,000. The taxable value being the same as the market, the lower of the two. And in this situation, you see that the tax is $132,000. And again, example three just completing the picture where, in this case, the market value would be too low, and it shows the different consequences of not maintaining market value on these types of properties.
And it always must be the lower of the market value or the Measure 50 value limit.
For sure, that is correct. For all the properties, we maintain the market value, the Measure 50 limit, and the lower of those two is the taxable value that shows on the tax roll.
So the potential is someone could pay a substantial amount for a piece of property, but it would be, he might be buying from Blue Sky or something of that nature, and it comes back to the whole debt analyst business at that point.
So, Chair, a very realistic example in this case may be where this industrial property has actually retired some property, and if we're not out doing our appraisal work and they have not notified us of that, that may still be on the roll. So that's an opportunity to identify that property that's been retired and make the adjustment to the account.
Other questions?
Sure.
Senator Chair.
How good are we at maintaining the market value? Industrial and centrally assessed property, does the state, does the Department of Revenue do that determining of value? Do you stay current?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, the department does all of the centrally assessed properties, and then the department is charged with responsibility of appraising all industrial properties that are over $1 million in value. We have a staff of about 30 appraisers that are charged with the responsibility to go out and maintain those market values. Mm-hmm. The process, very simply, is that the taxpayer actually files a return each year and starts from the previous year's value, reports to us the new property that they've added, and then the retirements that they've taken off the roll. So we do make an adjustment every year based on the information the taxpayer provides, and then we do go out and do appraisals of property and verify that we have good values on the roll.
Is that on some kind of a rotation, or do you do them every year?
Well, prior to Measure 50, Senator Joe, Mr. Chair, we have the six-year cycle. Now under Measure 50, the six-year cycle is gone. So I would say it's not always on a six-year cycle, depending upon the industry and the types of issues that we're finding in that area would determine how often we might go out and visit. For instance, right now in the electronics area, because of the crisis in Asia with the market, we are spending a little bit more time with some of the electronics company and making sure that we have good values on the road.
So are you assuming then for virtually all of this kind of property that we're at market value or very close?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, I guess we're trying to make good decisions and use our resources wisely to maintain market values, whether we are at market value on all these properties. I don't think I could honestly say that, but with the resources we have, we're attempting to do that.
And you think you're close?
I believe we are.
Okay. Mr. Evers, I had referred to the six-year cycle before, but after Measure 50, the six-year cycle goes away because the 3% automatic increase. We just assume that everything goes up by 6% unless market conditions dictate otherwise. Is that what we're assuming?
Mr. Chair, I think they were connected. Under the previous system, because we were at the market value, it was very important that we went out and reappraised properties on a cycle so that we had good market value. I think there was some connection to now with the Measure 50 limit, and especially since the focus was on residential properties, and as Ms. Archenko mentioned earlier, that we saw a period of time where residential properties are going up significantly in value. I think there was some connection to, since most properties would be at the limit, the importance of doing reappraisal at the market level would not be as important. not answer your question. I
you did answer my question, but I'm still trying to figure out how that got to the black box. The difficulty is that, in my own mind, where we had the 6-year cycle previously, we were appraising the same property once every 6 years. And now what happens is we just determine whether or not they've added $10,000, more than $10,000 in any 1 year, or $25,000 during the past 5 years to the property. And if they haven't done that, then we just basically automatically kick everything up by 3% of the base value.
Mr. Chair, if they have not added new property, then what we would do in the following year is look at the real market value. And if the real market value was higher than the Measure 50 limit, it would go at 3%. And then in the following year, that would still be lower, so that would be the taxable value that goes on the roll.
That real market value is based upon data analyst information.
That is correct. The database is primarily sales in the marketplace that they put into the database in order to determine the market value of the property.
Again, for the members of the committee, of the subcommittee, I just want to make sure that you understand that that's a very, very technical, vast information that small counties do not have rocket science folks. You know, I've seen some of this information. It is very exhaustive, and it's just very difficult for small counties to go in and do this data analysis work and then trying to apply some of this, and so it is very difficult. So I was trying to explore some way that we could take a look and just make this a whole lot easier. But after 47 and 50, I think things have just gotten so much more convoluted. It's just difficult. So okay, please proceed. I beg your pardon, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Turning to page 62. Just a brief snapshot of some of the primary functions that the department does in our administration of our part of the property tax system. I have a little bit more information about the first four bullets, so I'll move to those quickly. But we do value the large industrial property, the properties that exceed $1 million in value. The department is charged with valuing centrally assessed properties. As Ms. Archenko mentioned earlier, we do have a statewide mapping function where we are actually the cartographer for certain counties and provide statewide assistance to all counties. Statewide policy direction, one of the things in my learning curve has been the importance of partnering with the counties and the statewide property tax system and how we work with the counties. And then the last two bullets around our functions with the senior deferral program, which we discussed previously, and also our role in administering the timber tax system.
Mr. Evers, let me interrupt one more time. And we do have a couple of folks from the public that have signed up to testify. As we move into Department Administration, I'm wondering, is this a good point to stop and have the public testimony? And if that would be all right, why don't we do that? Why don't we just stop at 62? And invite those folks forward who have run out of time, or however they'd like to come forward here to find out. Thank you very much for your very ample and excellent testimony. And if we end up with a lot of extra time, we can come back to it. Otherwise, we'll take that up. Let's see. I think tomorrow we start off with passing one budget. The state library budget is our first budget up, and I think we're ready to go ahead and pass it, and then we'll start right back in with your budget. And I think we'll probably, following tomorrow's session, which looks like it's kind of a wrap up, I would hope that perhaps I could meet with you and our legislative fiscal officer and go through, because I'm in respect for Ms. Archenko's vacation time, how would you like us to finish up your budget without you even being in town?
I have complete trust in my deputy.
Somehow I knew you would say that. I think that trust is well placed. So I appreciate that.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you very much. just come to you. Mr. Tony Hyde has signed up to be a witness on behalf of Columbia County. He's a commissioner. State your name for the record, if you would, please, Mr. Hyde.
Representative Butler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tony Hyde, the chairman of the Board of Commissioners in Columbia County. And I would like to speak specifically to the work that the Department of Revenue did during the interim between the two sessions last year. I had the privilege of sitting on two of the interim task force of the Department of Revenue. One was for this particular piece that's been discussed today, which is assessment taxation, and the other one was forest land taxation. Forest land taxation, we have come to a draft point, but there is no final draft out yet. But more specifically, I just wanted to say that the Department of Revenue, in both cases, and especially in the Assessment Taxation Task Force, was pretty prestigious in their diversity. They were very good about the administration of those committees. And more importantly, the facilitation, which at some times, because of the diverse representation on those committees, became rather contentious. I think they did an incredible job. And the final report, I would like to wholeheartedly support. In particular, the bill that was adopted in the House Bill 2139, and the amendment that you will be considering in the next work session that fills out House Bill 2139, and that's $5 million for biennium appropriation to the Department of Revenue to the Assessment Taxation Grant Fund, contribution of 4% for the school interest. And that was really kind of the piece that was missing that's in that amendment. And I think that I just wanted you to know that we really support that, and we think it's very important. There was a lot of questions that were asked about the counties and the shortfall of their ability to actually assess and tax, especially the smaller counties. In Columbia County at 42,000, I think it's considered one of those smaller counties. And frankly, that ability is hampered at this point. And without this bill and the support of it, we're probably going to continue to be.
Mr. Hyde, can I display my total ignorance about the Columbia County and the state of Oregon in general, or some of the smaller counties? There are 42,000 people in Columbia County. I believe the map that we show indicates that Columbia County is one that did not receive any of the mapping project services from the state. You have a lot of growth in Columbia County, a lot of subdividing. Is there any of that that's going on in large amounts there?
Representative Butler, Columbia County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Oregon. We are contiguous to Multnomah and Washington County, and we're considered part of the Portland Metropolitan Statistical Area. That is one of the reasons why we have the $1 fee in this bill for the GIS mapping as the answer to some of our problems when it comes to mapping. And we are currently doing some research on what it's going to take us to get up to the 20th century before we end it.
I appreciate knowing that about your county. And being a very fast-growing county, then you do have a great deal of subdivision going on, and so you must maintain a rather substantial staff then to do mapping and maintain the Mylars and those kinds of things. And is that right?
Yes, sir, Butler, that is correct.
Tell me financially, how does that seem to work out, all of the mapping and so forth, and obviously, if you've got lots of new building going on, you've got the issue of figuring out what the fair market value of this new property addition is, and then applying the black box formula to it to come up with an assessed value. Has that seemed to work out okay for Columbia County?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have two things that are really unique in Columbia County. One is we have Tom Myers, who is probably the best assessor in the state of Oregon. And the other is...
Couldn't pay your assessor.
I won't say that because he's not here.
Oh, okay.
He's looking for a raise. And the other thing is that it's a battle that I seem to be losing, and hopefully I won't be this year, and that is the perception that because of Measure 50, we no longer need an increased staff or a staff at all of any size in the assessment taxation department. Because of that department in the last 2 years were the hardest hit. We, unfortunately, in our county, had to make cuts in the last 2 years in staff. And the biggest cuts in our staffing was from the assessment taxation. And I think both times they were wrong, and I think we're feeling the pinch of that now.
Tell me what the effect of that is. Is the effect of that to perhaps leave the market values inaccurate with relationship to the with regard to the assessed values?
Mr. Chair, if I could indulge for a second, I'll give you a specific example.
Absolutely.
We have also a urban renewal district that came in that Measure 50 time, and they were grandfathered in with the new rules. They got in just under the wire in Rainier, which is where we lost Trojan Plant. Because of the short staff, and I really point my finger to that, and their inability to really pay attention to that incredibly complex ratio that came down from Measure 50, they misquoted the amount of taxes that would be assessed to that area because of the urban renewal district, and specific to that. Because of that, the county ended up owing the urban renewal district $100,000, and I'm using rough numbers, that we did not tax. We ended up negotiating out $30,000, which came out of our economic development budget that we don't have. That was untaxed money, and it hurt everybody in the county, not just that urban renewal district who lost the $70,000, but the county who lost the $30,000.
So the urban renewal district, not having got on the tax rolls, in effect, lost $100,000, but was made whole by the county by a settlement of $30,000. Weren't made whole, but they were settled out for 30 cents on the dollar. In effect,
that's correct. Sure. So that's if I may, that's just a classic example of short staff.
Are there questions of other members of the committee to Mr. Hyde? Mr. Hyde, we appreciate your coming in today and apologize that we kept you here to this late hour, but your testimony is important to us, and we do appreciate the comments that you've made. And I guess it does solidify in my own mind that these numbers, you know, while we look at a $100,000 property and you say, well, it's somewhere between 71 and 88,000 is what the assessed value is, the common Joe isn't going to know whether that's right or wrong. And the formula is so complex, and then the index for 3%, I used to could understand that if my home went up 10% in value and my land went down and my lot went down 3% in value, that I was probably still somewhere near whole. And I could look across and see the same thing happen to my neighbor. Now, what that did to our tax rates, everybody was still voting their own tax rates back in the olden times. We're just removed from it another step at this particular point. It has become much more complex. Thank you very much, Mr. Hyde. We appreciate your being here today, and we're honored that you would come and give testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bob Kantine from Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you very much.
Are there others who are here today visiting that would like to give public testimony at this particular time? We're within a few minutes of closing time, so why don't we just go ahead at this time, and we will take back up Senate Bill 5541, Department of Revenue, public hearing and possible work session tomorrow, and we'll do that follow. Yes, I'm sorry. What I would like to do, we're not going to run away. What I would like to do is spend the 10 minutes with you and some of your staff, if I may, so we could spend some time together as we begin to prepare towards the resolution. If I may, we're not going to waste it, please believe me. Alright. That's
all right with me. The one concern I have.
Yes, sir.
I made the concern, maybe my comment. Since Major 50, is the 57, or what's that after that? Whatever is passed, Major 5. And then I thought it could be much simpler to figure out the appropriate taxes, but I'm assuring it is more complicated. And I'm not quite convinced yet. And it shouldn't be more complicated than it used to be. And then, I'm not convinced that part. And we should streamline on some of those issues. That's my concern I have. I went over there. It's running good. I like it. But that's the point I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think it concerns... thank you, Senator Lane, for that comment. And I think it concerns the counties. I think it concerns the taxing districts. And I know it's a concern to the Department of Revenue, because what we used to have is a system where we could kind of read the statement and follow it and know what was happening, or look at two different property tax statements if we received property side by side or the office building downtown. There's just so many variations now that affect every one of these properties, going back to the formulas that we had to derive as a result of 47 and the passage of Major 50, that it has become extremely complex. And I think that is the reason why we've heard today about House Bill 2139 to provide a little additional funds for assessment and taxation, and we may get more testimony regarding that. But I for one am concerned that what we've done is, in Measure 50, we basically voted an additional mandate upon our counties, and it's an additional unfunded mandate, if you will. We're trying to fund it in part. Senator Torres, yes.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on that. I think that we had a simpler tax system before Measure 5. Measure 5 added complications. Measure 50 added additional complications. The problem when you change your tax system drastically based on measures written by amateurs who ask for a whole lot of complicated things. And so we're adjusting. It's not the department's fault that this has happened. The department tries to make as much sense out of it as the department can. I would just say that when we think about the budget for this agency, and that's why we're here reviewing the budget, is that this is an agency that it spends its money wisely, and if we let it spend its money wisely, can make money for the state, because they can reduce the amount of people who don't pay their taxes, and if we invest in auditors and things like that, we can make some money. So I think we ought to remember that as we do the budget.
And one small comment.
Yes, sir.
I'm a small businessman, and then someone in my apartment got in, and then they find some little things in the deposit, and they don't pay rent, and then we went to the lawyer, negotiated, and then I have to give some money to her to move out. you know, that kind of things happen. Truthfully, I'm right. But practically, it is easier to skip the money and let the person go. The point is that I don't know that the revenue department is running that way, but sometimes we have to eat up some principles to practically apply to spend, you know, more than $10,000 or $500. As a small businessman, it is, even though it's an important principle, practically that does not apply in real business world.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that. And it is a very difficult situation and that's one of the things that we need to discuss in some detail as we get to the bottom line on this budget, is that how many do we think that we can really recapture back into the system, and how much will we bring back into the system if we can bring another 2% compliant taxpayers at what cost? And I have some issues, and they probably shouldn't be on public record, but I'm concerned about not just at what cost financially, but what cost in terms of wear and tear and safety to our personnel. And the unfortunately, the world that we live in today, that is part of what we have to take into consideration as we go out looking for non-compliant folks. And I am concerned about that too. But that's a different issue for a different time. Thank you very much, and we'll go ahead and recess over to tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and then we'll take that first the library budget at 1 o'clock. So you can handle 3 months, you think? Yeah. Okay.